Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Naughton. I'd like to welcome you to this program. You're listening to the Progressive Commentary Hour. Once a week, out of 20 hours of live broadcasting, I take on a very serious topic for the entire program and invite those individuals who are acutely aware of the causes and the solutions to that dilemma. Today, we're going to talk about how the GOP steals elections, a likely outcome for the upcoming one. The panelists enjoying this forum today will be Greg Palast. Greg is a journalist with the BBC and the British newspaper The Guardian, who's been called by the Tribune in the UK the most important investigative journalist of our time. He's won many awards, including the Financial Times, the National Press Club, and the George Orwell Courage in Journalism Awards. In the past, his investigations have included cover-ups, racketeering, and bribery among the big oil and energy companies and the nuclear industries, fraudulent site testing, and the lies over nuclear reactor safety measures. He'll be joined with Professor Harvey Wasserman. Harvey is a professor of history at Columbus State College and Capital University in Ohio. He is an investigative journalist, author, and has been a national voice in the anti-war and anti-nuclear movements for 40 years. He is also senior advisor for Greenpeace USA and Nuclear Information Resource Service. Among his many books are George W. Bush versus the Superpower of Peace. And more recently, an e-book introduced by Greg, Will the GOP Steal America's 2012 Elections? Harvey can be heard every Monday afternoon at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, hosting his own Green Power and Wellness on the Progressive Radio Network. His website is harveywasserman.com. Nice to have you with us today.
Great to be with you.
I'm very concerned, and we're going to take an opportunity to share your input on my concerns. As you know from being on the program before, I give a large overview and then keep quiet, and each of you will have your own opportunity to share as much insight on this problem as possible. That way we hear real context. We don't hear anything that's abbreviated, so we understand what you're thinking and what evidence you have to put forth. My concern is that George Bush stole the election from John Kerry and Al Gore both. In particular, in Ohio, for example, it was proven there was voter fraud. There was fraud because some precincts had 130% of the total registered voters for that precinct. In two cases, George W. Bush received over 240 direct votes, one after the other, almost a statistical impossibility. Also, on that particular ballot, those who were voting for John Kerry also were voting for gay rights, something George Bush was not for. And yet in the final tally, he ended up with a large percentage of those as well. We found that George Bush flew into Ohio on the day of the election results and no other place. And we're wondering why. What did he do? Who did he meet with? We also know that some of the polling precincts where there were very few people that had a lot of voting machines, and some of the largest precincts with the largest Democrat populace had very few as two or three, and in some cases, even those weren't working. People who submitted paper ballots had them rejected. Only the computer ballots were accepted, and it looked like Kerry was winning, and by all exit polls, he was winning. But throughout the night, one of those miracles of the Chicago Daily machine turned this around, and suddenly George Bush came out the victor. I'm not supporting either Obama or Mitt Romney. I would support one of the three independent candidates, Rocky Anderson, Jill Stein, or Gary Johnson. Neither of these two. I just see them, you know, two people sharing a common corporatized free market exploitation. But in spite of that, I don't like to see anybody win by cheating. So I'd like for each of you to take your turns and tell us what you think are the real problems and what we should know. And for both of you, what was the tactic of voter fraud in the past, and how has it changed as we enter the 21st century? And Harvey, you can speak on Ohio a lot because you're out there. And Greg, explain how in 2008 approximately 5,900,000 legitimate voters were removed from voting lists, which they're trying to do again. The forum is yours. We'll begin with you, Harvey.
Okay, I'm here at the crime scene in Central Ohio, Gary. It's a pleasure and an honor to be on your show. And as you mentioned, I'm supporting Jill Stein. I'm not supporting Barack Obama or arguing for him. But if the Republicans steal this election, that'll be 3 out of 4, which is a pretty heavy load. In our new book, Will the GOP Steal America's 2012 Election, which we've made into an e-book so it's easy to get, I do a history of stolen elections in this country, and it's a long tradition, 1800, 1824, 1876, 1888, 1896, and then, of course, 2000 and 2004. I omitted 1960, John Kennedy's father did buy him Illinois, but he actually won, he would have won the election anyway. He lost Illinois, so, but nonetheless, this year, I feel that it's highly unlikely, it could happen, it's highly unlikely Barack Obama is going to win. He might win the popular vote, that's possible. But the Republican Party has 9 governors in key swing states. In Florida, Virginia, Pennsylvania, Michigan, Ohio, Wisconsin, Iowa, New Mexico, and Arizona. And those governors have the capability of doing 2 things. First of all, they can very easily and have been doing strip the voter rolls. And the Brennan Center in New York City estimates that some 10 million people have already been disenfranchised by the new Jim Crow voter ID laws. And these, of course, are people who are tend to be lower income, younger people who don't yet have a driver's license, older people who can't get a driver's license, don't want one, can't find their birth certificates, and, of course, blacks and Hispanics, people primarily, guilty of being suspected of voting Democratic. And so with 10 million people removed from the voter rolls, we're seeing additional millions in Ohio, 2.5 since 1995, by the state boards of elections, again, suspected Democrats. So this is a huge toll on the people who are able to come out and vote, and it will be complemented by the theft of electronic votes. Electronic voting machines have proliferated since the theft of the 2000 election in Florida with George and Jeb Bush doing the dirty work there. They expanded in 2004, and we know that late at night, on election night, there was a huge shift in Ohio, which decided the election. Kerry, as of 12:20 at night, was ahead 4 percentage points, more than 200,000 votes. And then miraculously, after 2 a.m., there was a hiatus in reporting, and we know how it happened. After 2 a.m., the vote count switched. George Bush wound up winning Ohio by 2%, a shift of 6%, which is a virtual statistical impossibility. And in fact, 9 of the 11 swing states in the 2004 election had major shifts in the exit polls from John Kerry towards George W. Bush. That is, of course, the odds of that are in the hundreds of millions to one. So we believe that in this year, Bob Patrick and I, who are doing this research here, we believe that this year it is highly likely that when it comes down to it on election night, if Mitt Romney is ahead in the popular vote, which we doubt, but or has a shot at stealing the vote by flipping electronic votes in the key swing states, they will do it. I mean, we have Sheldon Adelson and the Koch brothers and the Chamber of Commerce spending literally hundreds of millions of dollars to ensure that Mitt Romney gets in the White House. And all they really have to do is spend a paltry sum when push comes to shove to flip the electronic voting machines. They're all controlled, or almost all controlled, by Republican companies. They are not in any way, shape, or form transparent. The public has no access to the codes, the computer codes that power these things. The vote count will be done privately. These are privately owned machines. Their so-called proprietary rights have been protected. And so if you vote on an electronic voting machine, you have no idea where that vote is going to wind up if it ever even turns up. And so it is it will be a very easy thing for Rick Scott, the governor of Florida, Tom Corbett, the governor of Pennsylvania, John Kasich, the governor of Ohio, Rick Snyder, the governor of Pennsylvania, of Michigan, Scott Walker, the governor of Wisconsin, any one of those guys at midnight on election night will be able to flip the vote to Mitt Romney. And so, you know, the combination of the Electoral College, the huge amounts of money pouring in, the stripping of the voter rolls through the new Jim Crow laws, and the flipping of the electronic voting machines, I don't give Barack Obama much chance. It could happen, but I see that another stolen election coming up, and this, the reason we do this is not because we're concerned the Republicans are stealing from the Democrats, but ultimately because if the Republicans can steal from the Democrats and the Democrats can steal from the Republicans, then what chance does a third-party grassroots movement have of making use of the ballot to make serious social change? And that's our major concern, and that's why we wrote, "Will the GOP Steal America's 2012 Election?"
I appreciate that introduction, Harvey. Greg, here are the issues I'd like for you to address in this order, if you would, please.
Sure.
I'd like for you to take on Karl Rove and Congressman Tim Griffin.
Okay.
Then from there, the Koch brothers and FreedomWorks, ALEC, the radical Christian right, and the e-machine voting to show how it's been done in the past or how it could be done this time.
That's a tall order, but for you, Gary, anything.
Thank you.
This is Greg Palast reporting from New York. And, we go back, and by the way, from your earlier question to the bit of the history. And I was, by the way, really thrilled to write the introduction to Will the GOP Steal 2012 with Harvey Wasserman and Bob Fitrakis, which I recommend you get. And by the way, I do also recommend that you get the book that is co-sponsored by the Gary Knoll Show and Progressive Radio, which is Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, which comes out tomorrow morning, or tonight at midnight, I should say.
Well, congratulations.
Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, How to Steal an Election in 9 Easy Steps. Greg Palast investigates the Koch gang, Karl Rove, and the band, their buck buddies. It includes a comic book by Ted Rall, introduction by Bobby Kennedy, and we're still a few hours from launch it, but we are the number one nonfiction book in America right now in Barnes & Noble. So, because people want to know what's going on. And that's why I'm thrilled that despite being number one, we don't get on the so-called mainstream, but thank God we're on the null stream. So I appreciate that. So now let's go into what's going on here. In 2000, for BBC television, I uncovered that Catherine Harris and Jeb Bush had removed tens of thousands of black people from the voter rolls of Florida, calling them felons. I went through the list, and their only crime was voting while black. I wasn't guessing, because in the Florida voter rolls, as you'll see in the illustration in Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, you have BLA next to the name of every black voter in Florida. That's by law, okay? They know how to zoom in on black voters and challenge their votes. And if you, now, what's changed since then? The answer is it's gotten worse. Catherine Harris was using floppy disks. Karl Rove is using massive data mining equipment, the system called Data Trust, a massive program used by Karl Rove called Data Trust, which has now been combined with a program created by the Koch brothers called Themis. So you put Themis together with Data Trust, and it's Catherine Harris on steroids with a jetpack. And so, for example, they have come up with a new list of so-called felon criminals being wiped off the voter rolls of Florida, tens of thousands, including, as we show in the book, there is the criminal Mrs. Bobby Moore, B-O-B-B-I, Bobby Moore. She is BLA. She is black. And she is being removed from the voter rolls because someone named Robert Moore, Mr. Robert Moore, committed a felony crime. So Robert Moore, male white, removes Bobby Moore, female black, in Florida. How do they pull that off? Themis and Data Trust. And where do they get this? Where do they get these things? And by the way, that's the purging is one way, caging, prestidigitizing, blocking, tossing, rejecting. There's 9 ways that they steal and all of them are racially poisoned, all of them are ugly, and they don't even have to wait for Election Day. We're looking, 22 million people have been purged from the voter rolls. That is an official number of the U.S. Elections Assistance Commission in the past 2 years, 22 million people, and one in five voters in the swing state of Colorado, where the Republican Secretary of State, for example, removed 50,000 felon voters, and you'll love this, Gary, felons can vote in Colorado, as in most states, and yet they remove 50,000. Now, what's going on? How do these guys get this money? I actually am not supporting any candidate, as I'm a British reporter for BBC TV. I have my American citizenship. I'll vote, but I'm not supporting anyone. What I'm supporting is the right to vote. And what I'm very concerned with is not so much the GOP, per se, will steal the election, but that these billionaires will steal the election. That's why it's billionaires and ballot bandits. That's what they're up to. By the way, the Koch brothers, until recently, weren't even registered Republicans. David Koch was going to run as for governor of Kansas as a Democrat. He ran against Reagan on the Libertarian Party ticket for president back in 1984. And, they're not Republicans. They are not for the GOP. They're for themselves. They have an organization called Americans for Prosperity, their prosperity. And that's what's important. And so, for example, how did the Kochs get their money? Which is, by the way, the four Koch brothers together are worth just short of $50 billion. They began the old fascist way, that is, Daddy got it for them. He had founded the John Birch Society after he made $1 billion building refineries for Joe Stalin in the Soviet Union. They then went on to the great American way fortunes are built by stealing from Indians. Before Greg Palast was an investigative reporter, I was an investigator, and working individually and with a news outlet in coordination with the FBI, we followed Coke oil trucks stealing oil from Indian Reservation, the Osage Indian Reservation. That's how they're making their money, stealing oil from the reservations, sucking it out of the ground and taking off with it. And we follow the trucks back to a loading dock in Oklahoma. There's a big, tall, white guy in a loading dock telling these guys to steal that oil. And the guy telling them to steal the oil was Charles Koch himself, already a billionaire, saying, steal oil from an Indian reservation. And we had one of his guys wired, a senior vice president of his company, who asked, why? Why, in other words, why would you, Koch, steal money? You're a billionaire. Why do you want, $100 worth of oil from some Indian family? And this is very important to understand what's going on in this election. Charles Koch said, and this is on the tape, I want my fair share, and that's all of it. And the only way that he can get all of it, he's got to also own the White House and Congress, even if Obama wins. The steal in the Senate and congressional races is just unbelievable that's going on. The massive wipeout of minority voters in particular, as felons, as alien voters, as inactive voters, the massive purge. And we had this gimmick that for example, Karl Rove used. So the Koch brothers created one machine. This guy called the Vulture, Paul Singer the Vulture, that's not the name I gave him, but the Vulture, his bankers call the Vulture, has funded Karl Rove with the Iceman, another sweet guy. So the Iceman and the Vulture. And by the way, I just tried to crash a breakfast between the Vulture, a multi-billionaire, and Mitt Romney on Friday. They were having breakfast together. I tried to break in. I didn't even get a croissant. The Vulture's worth billions, and he's putting up the money. He's the one who, by the way, told Romney to pick Paul Ryan, because money talks, even though Romney personally said, I wish I didn't pick him. But, even Romney doesn't have enough money to park this guy's car. So he's told what to do. And one of the gimmicks that Karl Rove does is called caging. They send letters to soldiers, students on vacation, homeless shelters, and say, do not forward. When the letters come back, That is, they're caged in the terminology they use. When the letters come back into the cage, they challenge the right of those voters to vote, saying that they're fraudulent voters. So, for example, in Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, I can show you the list, Karl Rove's list, the caging lists, which include, there's two that I put in the book. One is all from the Jacksonville Naval Air Station. Jacksonville Naval Air Station. They literally challenged the votes of active duty soldiers who were in Afghanistan. They mail in their ballots from Afghanistan or Iraq. Their vote is, their absentee ballot is challenged. And by the way, if you're a soldier, believe it or not, you may vote from overseas. They challenged their vote. They don't even know they've lost their vote. And they did this to black college students who were away on vacation in August. And they're doing this now with their new machines, Themis and Data Trust. It's going completely wild. And I have to say that Bobby Kennedy, who is a professor of law, whose dad wrote the Voting Rights Act, says in the book, in Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, he says, this is a crime. They should be in jail, including the guy that pulled, there are three guys that pulled the stunt. The guy who actually sent out the caging lists is a guy named Tim Griffin. Where is he now? He's not in jail. He's in Congress, care of a $164,000 donation from the Koch brothers, probably the largest single donation ever given to a single candidate by an unaffiliated source, ever. So the Koch brothers own this guy. He's Rove's assistant, so he's not in prison. He's in Congress. By the way, his number one thing that he's promoting is the XL pipeline, a Koch specialty. Then there's Karl Rove, his boss, whom George Bush gave the flowery nickname Turd Blossom. And then there is Griffin's assistant. He's not in jail either. Griffin's assistant is named Matt Rhodes. He is the campaign chairman for Mitt Romney. So they're not in jail, but they may soon be in the White House. And if they win by the votes, well, that's democracy. If they win by caging and purging and all the things that should land them in jail, that's a crime, and we intend to bust them.
Thank you. I appreciate that overview. I still would like for you to focus more on Karl Rove. We
yes.
need to know more about this man because he really is very smart.
Yes,
and
very.
Without him, George Bush, he just reminds me of an imbecile. I mean, this
yes.
man...
Well, Karl Rove, it's interesting.
I've had conversations with bricks that were more enlightening.
Yes. Well, bricks don't fake it. They don't open their mouths when they don't know what they're saying. But Karl Rove was known as Bush's brain. And since Bush called Rove Turd Blossom, you know what Bush thought of his own brain. But, he's a very smart man. In fact, Carl, I know you're probably listening because he's an avid follower of mine. He's the first guy to sign up on my Twitter account. And, because he knows. And by the way, the Justice Department, when they did go through his files, and the few that they got, they did find he does keep a file on Greg Palast. And which is convenient, so I don't have to like save my own computer files. I know that they're in Carl's. He's a very smart man, absolutely. Caging is a brilliant, if sick and illegal, and racist operation. Imagine you send letters to college kids in August. Of course they're not there. They have a right to vote for those addresses. It's just that when you say do not forward, it's a crime to target people racially. You can't do it. But they're so brilliant. When they did have United States prosecutors, and this is to show you how brilliant Rove is, they pull off this caging crime. And that really was one of the key things that killed it for the election of John Kerry. And by the way, unlike Al Gore, who hid from the facts, Kerry has said that Greg Palast is correct. And he has made a point of this and has actually put in new legislation to try to block this stuff. But it's already illegal. So how did Rove get away with it? The answer is when some federal prosecutors, including a Republican prosecutor, David Iglesias, try to blow the whistle on this fake racial attack on voters, they simply fired the prosecutors. Rove went to Bush and had the prosecutors removed. He had David Iglesias fired. And who was a good Republican, but he wouldn't go along with stealing the vote. He thought it was vile. He was told, by the way, this is the one that even shocked me. He said Rove's people told him to go out and arrest innocent voters so they could say that there was a bunch of vote fraud the idea is that they're trying to prevent vote fraud, they say, but they can't find fraudulent voters. So they said, go somewhere, arrest some people. And he said, yeah, but the names you gave me from these caging lists, it's all phony. There's no illegal voters here. And they said, well, arrest someone anyway. You can always let them go. He was stunned that, you know, like the Soviet Union, that you go out and arrest people just, you know, because it's politically helpful. He refused. He was fired. And here's the evil thing. Eight prosecutors were fired who refused to go along. That story never came out in the press. They kept saying U.S. prosecutors were fired for political reasons. They all, everyone, had refused to go along with a fake attack on voters. All were Republicans, by the way. And one was replaced as a federal prosecutor by Tim Griffin, the guy who committed the crime. So when you commit a federal crime and as a result you are named federal prosecutor, that means that Karl Rove is playing on a seven-dimensional chessboard that you can't even see. That is so beyond anything that the Democrats can figure out or handle. It's just deeply, you know, disturbing. And one of the reasons we wrote Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, I say we because Ted Rall wrote a comic book that goes inside it and Kennedy wrote a chapter in the intro, is that at least you should have some idea how this game is played so you yourself can try to bust it and protect yourself.
I appreciate the deep insights there. Greg, stay on the line. Harvey, back to you. Harvey, go through in detail how the GOP is already stealing the Ohio vote, since you're out in Ohio, and about 1.25 million citizens from Ohio voter rolls have been purged. That's 20% of the roughly 5.2 million votes counted for president in the state in 2008, and the purge focuses on counties that are predominantly urban and Democrat. So take us through each one of these areas so that we can better understand how this is all going down and how it has gone down.
Well, prior to the 2004 election, which they definitely stole from John Kerry here in Ohio, the voter rolls were purged of about 300,000 voters, mostly in Cincinnati, Columbus, and Cleveland in the inner city areas. And that, combined with the flipping of the electronic voting machines in the dead of night, is really what gave John Kerry a defeat in 2004, although we were furious and remain furious with him. I know he's come around a bit, but he conceded very early the day after the election, should never have done that. There were 250,000 votes still uncounted in Ohio, and to this day, there are still 90,000 votes cast in Ohio in 2004 in the presidential election that have never been counted. And, you know, it's a terrible knock on our democracy, or what's left of it, that they could get away with doing that. And I will tell you also, people are under the illusion that the law has a big role to play here. We won a federal lawsuit after the 2004 election mandating, requiring that the 88 counties in Ohio keep intact all the ballot records, all the election records from the 2004 election, so that we could have a meaningful recount. 54 of the 88 counties went ahead and destroyed their ballot records anyway. So there's been no meaningful, and no one was prosecuted for that, and there has never been a reliable recount of the 2004 election in Ohio. So leading up now into 2012, we have, which we did not have in 2008, and by the way, people ask, what's the difference between 2008, when Obama managed to win, and 2012? Well, one of the big differences is that in 2008, we had Democratic governors in Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Michigan, and we had a moderate Republican, Charlie Crist, in Florida. This year, we have four screaming right-wing banshee Republicans in all of these states, in addition to Wisconsin, Iowa, New Mexico, and Arizona. So this is a real rigged setup. And what we've had now, is really since 2000, is the spread of electronic voting machines. We don't know exactly what percentage of the vote in Ohio will be cast on electronic voting machines, but it will be substantially higher than it was in 2004. The Help America Vote Act, which was pushed through Congress by an Ohio congressman named Bob Ney, who wound up in prison for various crimes. Those electronic voting machines were funded by the federal government, hugely profitable for the Republican corporations that own them. Those corporations maintain the source code secretly and will be doing the counting after the election, and there will be no recourse to the public. So this is a black box, and it's one that Joe Stalin would have done flips for. Joe Stalin, who said it doesn't matter who casts the votes, only who counts them. Now, in Ohio, it's basically a two-pronged strategy, very simple. You strip as many people as you possibly can from the voter rolls. Since 2009, it's been more than a million. Since around 2005, it's been 2.25 million. And we see now there's a major investigative piece in the local paper, a conservative paper, by the way, that says that the voter rolls in the rural Republican states are actually bloated. That's the term they use, bloated. And we, as you mentioned at the top, we had a couple of rural counties in Ohio where 130% of the registered voters voted. That's genuine patriotism, I got to tell you. We had two counties. Two precincts, at any rate, that had more than 100% turnout. I guess it's proof that the Christians really are in charge here. We call it loaves and fishes voting. So that is going to happen this time around. We have a right-wing Republican governor, John Kasich, a John Husted, a Republican Secretary of State. They're in control. They will have the election set up, make it very difficult for suspected Democrats to vote. And I will say another thing, that one of the things they did in 2004 that we expect to see again in 2012 is the jamming of the polls in inner-city districts. Now, in 2004, they restricted the number, illegally restricted the number of voting machines, so people had to wait for hours and hours. But they also had challengers, Republican challengers, inside the polling stations, who just challenged one after another, one person after another, and just made it. It took the average black person, well, it took black people in Ohio an average of 3 to 5 hours. Well, actually, it was an average of over an hour to vote, whereas it took the average white voter five minutes. And we expect a replay of that. And, you know, you have to look at this. These guys, Sheldon Adelson, the Koch brothers, the Chamber of Commerce, this is just business for them. We saw this week a story come out that Sheldon Adelson expects to realize $2 billion in tax breaks from Romney's plan, his tax break plan. So Adelson has said he spent whatever it takes, like $100 million, he's willing to donate to Romney, which he can do because of the Citizens United decision. That's just a 20-to-1 bet. I mean, you know, if he wins with his $100 million, that's multiplied 20 times. Koch brothers are the same thing. The Chamber of Commerce are the same thing. This is just business to these guys. And it's folly to think that they would spend hundreds of millions of dollars to put Romney in the White House and not go the extra 9 yards in these 9 swing states and buy the electronic votes and restrict the access to the polls as we lead up to it. So we're seeing that in Ohio, very, very clear. And once again, Ohio could decide the election. And I don't give Obama much chance, frankly, given what's going on.
Harvey, thank you. Harvey, for that, one more follow-up to that. What about redistricting?
Well, redistricting, they redistricted Dennis Kucinich. You can't fault these guys for not having a sense of humor. They took Dennis Kucinich's district and merged it with Marcy Kaptur, another Democrat, so that they forced Dennis to run against a fellow Democrat, and he lost because she had more resources, and they've done that all over the state, really, there, where they combine the Democratic districts and force them to vote against each other. Ohio has lost two congressional districts, and will be losing more. And we outlined this in how the GOP will the GOP steal America's 2012 election, which Greg has graciously introduced the ebook for us. And we're looking here at the real end of our democracy. As I said at the top, Gary, we are not that concerned about Democrats and Republicans stealing elections from each other. We're concerned, as you are, with the death of democracy. And if the GOP can come in and steal 3 out of 4 presidential elections, we expect Obama to probably win the popular vote. But I'd be very surprised if he wins the electoral vote, and that would make 3 of the last 4 elections that a party has stolen, and doesn't bode well for the use of the ballot in the future to make genuine social change.
Greg, clearly there are enough powerful Democrats who have the resources, the unlimited pockets for the best law firms, investigative journalists, and they also have an awful lot of stay-behinds from Clinton who are in positions of power. Why is it that you and Harvey and a handful of other, Robert Kennedy Jr., are doing all this, the deep digging, when they should have been doing this? Why haven't we heard them bring this up? I haven't heard anyone in this or the last campaign talk a single word about the corruption in the voting process.
And speaking of dirty hands, Bill Clinton came over to me last year, and we were in a room together, and he ran across the room, grabbed my hand, and said, listen, we're going to really bust open the voter fraud thing. And, you know, we'll talk about what happened, the real reason the prosecutors were fired, et cetera. And this was, you know, Clinton, I mean, I didn't wave him over. You know, he was like, you know, on a roll. But then, you know, Bubba, despite all the big talk, it didn't happen. And I went to John Conyers, and I said, what's going on? You know, and he said, he's head of the Justice Committee of Congress, Democrat. He said, I can't get, basically, he's from the Black caucus, he can't get the White caucus moving. And there's many reasons, because they both elites of both parties have their billionaires. And that's one thing I'm going to warn Democrats reading Billionaires and Ballot Bandits. You're going to find out about the billionaires behind the Democrats, and unfortunately also behind vote theft by the Democrats. Now, it's not on the same order. Republicans have Themis and, you know, the Koch's Themis and Rose Data Trust, and the Democrats have their floppy disks. And the Republicans steal by caging 200,000 voters, wiping out 1.2 million voters in Ohio, and the Democrats do things like fill out ballots in nursing homes. But it's, or even worse, the Democrats go after the same voters. And I say, now what is that? Well, how does that happen? The biggest and worst purges in America occurred against the Hispanic Democrats of New Mexico, which is the only reason why, in a crazy big Democratic state, Bush won in 04. Massive elimination of the poor Hispanic vote. And that vote was wiped out by Hispanic Democrats, the elite. I called the Secretary of State and said, how come in one precinct, for example, a precinct of soldiers, where soldiers send their ballots, there wasn't a single vote for President of the United States? They don't care about their commander-in-chief. And you know what she said? She said, those people, almost all Hispanics, some Native Americans, those people can't make up their minds. And she is a Hispanic Democrat, but from the elite. By the way, she's not going to prison, which I appreciate from her voting shenanigans. But the problem is the Democrats have dirty hands with the money and the ballot side, not anywhere near what the Republicans have, but dirty enough that they can't bring up the issue. And that's really one of the evil, dark things. And in the book, I even talk about, you know, Bubba's deal with the Koch brothers in Billionaires and Ballot Bandits. There's a chapter on the deal he cut with the Koch brothers. It's rough stuff here. I mean,
What did Clinton cut with the Koch brothers?
Two things. You know, think about it. Where did Bill Clinton come from? You don't usually have a president come out of Dog Patch, Arkansas, no offense, but, you know, Bubba's don't usually become president. And he was the creature of something called the Democratic Leadership Council, which was kind of this new group of right-wing Democrats, post-McGovern, who basically said, we have to get rid of the FDR New Deal agenda of the Democratic Party. And the DLC was formed with a $100,000 contribution from the Koch brothers. So they helped boost Clinton. Once Clinton was in office, the evidence is very strong that Clinton took $1 million from the Chinese Indonesian family, the Riatis. That would have been an impeachable offense, not the zipper stuff. At the same time, if you read, and you mentioned, you asked me to speak about a group, free, which is now called FreedomWorks, which is the engine of the Tea Party, used to be called Campaign for a Sound Economy. That was boosted by the Koch brothers. The Koch brothers, however, had created a front group called Triad, you know, like the Chinese money laundering gangs. And they put in all these vicious commercials into the 94 election, knocked off the Democratic majority, created Newt Gingrich as the majority leader, who then could pass the laws that the Kochs wanted. Newt Gingrich's contract for America, as the Center for Investigative Reporting said, is, you know, looks like it was written for the Kochs, which is inaccurate. It was written by the Kochs. And they won that Congress through illegal corporate contributions. This is, by the way, pre-Citizens United. Corporations couldn't give money, and they put the money. Triad was just a front for Koch Industries. So now what happens? You actually had an honest Republican senator named Thompson. You know, like, remember, you know, the guy that plays the prosecutor on... CSI or whatever it is. Actually, because he plays on TV, he thought he really was a prosecutor. So he was going to prosecute the Kochs. He thought they should go to prison. He got the information through the congressional investigators about the illegal corporate contributions. And then they would prosecute the Riottis, and we'd have clean politics. That's not how it works. Trent Lott pulled him aside. I got the inside information from those on the committee themselves and from one of the senators involved. Lott said, okay, that doesn't happen. We're going to trade. We don't prosecute the Clinton and the Riottis, and the Democrats don't prosecute Newt Gingrich and the Koch brothers. So we'll trade billionaires. This is the problem. Both sides have billionaires, which they have to protect. So it's hands off each other's billionaires, hands off each other's ballot burglars. And that's the grim system. Together, they agree to skinning and fleecing the public. The unfortunate thing is for the public is that we're left out of the game, and this time, of course, the Democrats have agreed to play the game with them, knowing full well that in this election, the cards are stacked completely against them.
Right. And Gary, we have to understand, you mentioned this before, that the real game here is the Democrats and Republicans holding power. We have not had in this country a president who was not a Democrat or a Republican since the 1850s. And, you know, we started with, Lincoln was the first Republican, and the guy before him was actually a gay Democrat, James Buchanan. But, you know, since then, nobody outside the duopoly has had become president. And then we write in Will the GOP Steal America's 2012 Election about the turn of the last century, between the 1890s and the 1920s, you had major challenges to the power structure, the billionaires, from the Populist Party, which was rural-based, and then the Socialist Party, which was based in the urban labor movement and led by Eugene V. Debs. These two were the last major grassroots movements who had a party system together that could challenge the power of the duopoly. And the populists were defeated in the election of 1896. And by the way, that election was stolen, and the guy who did it, Mark Hanna, is Karl Rove's great hero. Mark Hanna made William McKinley president the same way Karl Rove made George W. Bush president. And they actually, McKinley was only slightly smarter. But nonetheless, and then between the beginning of World War I and 1920, Woodrow Wilson, the Democrat, used force of violence to crush the socialist movement. And since that time, nobody has been able to. He imprisoned Debs, absolutely.
Yeah, he imprisoned Debs.
And Wilson was a horrible...
Because he didn't support the draft.
Wilson was a horrible man who really... my two least favorite presidents are Democrats, Andrew Jackson and Woodrow Wilson. And Wilson ran in 1916 on a pledge to keep the United States out of World War I, and then, of course, immediately got us in it and used the war as cover to crush the socialists. So since that time, the Democrats and Republicans have maintained a duopoly. And when you see them stealing elections from each other, you have to remember that when push comes to shove, the two of them will get together and steal the elections from the public, from the grassroots. And that's the real danger here. It's not so much that the GOP this year will steal it from the Democrats, which I think they probably will, but rather that they trade back and forth, as Greg says, and there's no room left to use the ballot to change the nature of our country. And that's where it gets really, really dangerous. And that's why we wrote this book and why we continue with Greg and so many others to do what we try to do to protect our electoral process.
I would agree with that. Harvey, Greg, we're going to take a slight detour.
Okay.
But it's still connected. And it's probably a little piece of history that very few, if anyone, in this audience is aware of. Most people do not connect the power that you are selected before you are elected. Now, I happen to know that Clinton was also selected by the governor of Arkansas, Winthrop Rockefeller. He was also he was also a Rhodes Scholar, not because he was brilliant intellect. He was not, but because Fulbright was his patron. But we also know that very early on, in his 20s, he was a member of the Trilateral Commission, the Bilderbergs, the Council on Foreign Relations. But then something interesting happened involving the association, him, and he had some real heavy hitters behind him, including the Stevens family and Tyson Foods. But also the owners of the largest nuclear power company, or one of the top two.
Yes.
And then there's an episode that no one ever talks about, and that is the head of the Rose Law Firm, who would later become a Clinton appointee, and he was number two or three in the Justice Department.
Yes. Number two.
He had an employee named Hillary Clinton. And Hillary Clinton was getting was billing hours that she was doing for this work for this energy company. The energy company was getting screwed, and then this man was indicted, pled out, went to jail, and then you have some information that no one's uncovered. You uncovered it, so I want you to tell us about it to show you how slippery the Clintons are, and what happens when you have powerful people on your side.
Yeah, I should mention, for those who don't know Greg Palast, I was an investigative reporter for The Guardian. I still do investigative reports for The Guardian, Newspapers of Britain, and BBC TV. But oddly, this case started when I got a call from an attorney general, a young attorney general named Bill Clinton, who wanted me to work for him and do some work for him in Arkansas on investigating this big nuclear power company, Entergy. And I said, I'm not working for some guy from Dogpatch, and so I ignored it. But then here was the odd thing. Later, when he ran for president, he seems to be getting an awful lot of support from this company that supposedly he was trying to investigate and oppose as an attorney general. His wife was a lawyer, and except she wasn't Hillary Clinton. She was Hillary Rodham. And Bill Clinton, as Attorney General, was arguing a case against this big nuclear power company, and Hillary Rodham, his wife, was the lawyer on the other side. And as he likes to point out, she's the one who made all the money. So you can imagine how those cases worked out. It was, you know, and it was breathtaking for those of my colleagues who worked in Arkansas to watch this game being played out. Later, Webster Hubble, number two at the Justice Department, was nailed by his partners for false billing. They got in some fight with each other. So lawyers made up billing. They made up their billing records so that they would way overcharge these companies. However, they didn't mind it because, after all, it's the governor's wife's law firm. Why not? So corporations weren't, none of the corporations complained about being overbilled. They understood what the game was about. They're not hiring the firm for work, right? So, but it is a crime if you get caught faking your billing hours. That is a fraud. It's a crime. So Webster Hubble, number two at the Justice Department, rather than divulge his records, he simply pled guilty and agreed to go to prison, which is quite amazing. He literally almost rushed to go to prison when he could have easily said, cut a plea deal and said, here's all the information. Now, I've done billing fraud investigations. And by the way, some of this, by the way, is in Billionaires and Ballot Bandits, in the new book that's out tonight. I did investigations when I worked law firms of fake billing. You can't fake your billings about meetings unless you put down who's in the fake meeting. So, of course, since Ms. Rodham was this guy's partner, it was obviously going to be that there were fake meetings with his partner. So Hillary faked her records, too. Hubble, when asked if Hillary Rodham Clinton had committed the felony crime of faking her billing records, he said inscrutably, well, everyone fakes their records, whatever that means, okay? Everyone. So, you know, there's your answer. But he went to prison rather than rat her out. Now, why would he go to prison? This lawyer, I've never seen a lawyer get so many clients on his way to a federal prison. And he was stripped of his right to practice law. And remember I told you about the $1 million from the Riotti family? Well, they hired him through this big nuclear energy company, which owns, for example, the Indian Point nuclear plant in New York. They hired him on his way to prison, gave him $500,000, this nuclear energy company working, and they got the money from the Riotti family. Supposedly he would be a consultant on their deals with China while he's in the Huskow serving time. So, you know, we could laugh about it, but that's how the game is played. So they took care of Clinton. They took care of the one person that could either get Clinton impeached or Hillary, you know, put in leg irons. You might say that's how they all do it. As Hubble said, they all do it.
But
that's how they ended up cutting a deal.
Greg, here's the takeaway moment. Mm-hmm. The man was found guilty of overbilling the very company that would then hire him on his way to jail. That never happens unless there's a quid pro quo. Look, even though you stole from us, and even though you've pled guilty, even though you're going to go to jail, we still like him. We're going to give you a lot of money, more than we've ever given anyone in our history. Oh, and by the way, don't you dare ever mention that Hillary Rodham was your associate and overbilled because she could lose her license. If she loses her license, that's a disgrace to the president. That stops their future ambitions. And all the people who participated as hang-along parasites, and they had thousands of them later on, would have been affected. Man, and no one touches this story.
Well, it just shows
you the contempt these people have for anything is truthful. So I don't believe anything, Hillary, Bill, none of these people do I believe anything they say.
I have to tell you.
I think that's a good explanation for why Al Gore and John Kerry walked away from the 2000 and 2004 elections. Both of them were the winners in those presidential elections. $500 million was spent on their behalf. Clearly, as Greg has reported and we've reported here from Columbus, clearly both elections were stolen, and yet the candidates for the Democratic Party in neither case pursued these crimes of the century. And I guarantee you, if 2012 is stolen from Barack Obama, he will not say a word. He will just go quietly off to wherever he's going to go with his huge pension plan and not rock the corporate boat.
Fellas, unfortunately, we're out of time. By the way, take a look. Bill Clinton has made more money personally since leaving the presidency than all other American presidents preceding him combined. And there's a high probability that Barack Obama will even get near that. So
As long as he keeps his mouth shut.
They all keep their mouth shut. Have you seen any of them ever talk to anyone about anything that could have compromised? They never tell you the truth about anything. There's never a conspiracy in their world. By the way, Al Gore did have a group on his behalf challenge it up to the Supreme Court, but it could have still been fought in the public arena by showing the corruption and bringing those who were responsible to the public's eye, because it was known at that time, Harvey, as you know. They stopped.
Absolutely.
They pulled their punch. If Al Gore could have chosen to, he could have knocked those people in the last century, and we all know it. Any of us who are investigative journalists know that. Unfortunately, he didn't. I don't trust him. I don't trust any of these clowns.
Well, John Kerry had a $7 million fund expressly devoted to checking up on voter, on the theft of an election and spent not a cent of it, except attacking Bob Petraeus and I.
Yeah.
I should know. This is Greg Palast, because I think people are going to say, wow, what a downer. We don't stand a chance. So please go to ballotbandits.org, ballotbandits.org, where you can download two things. Number one, 7 ways to beat the ballot bandits. So you kind of have your own ballot condom. There's certain steps you can take which will greatly reduce the chance you'll get purged, caged, and finagled with. So ballotbandits.org, download 7 ways to beat the ballot bandits. It's also at the back of the book, Billionaires of Ballot Bandits, but you don't have to get the book. The other thing that's at ballotbandits.org is a listing of media and action resources. Right at the very top is Gary Null, on the very top row of the media resources. So keep listening to these programs so you know what's happening that's not force-fed down your throat by the doofus media. And second, there's action groups like Headcount, Rock the Vote, Operation Rainbow Push, LULAC, the big Hispanic organizations that are working with us. You have problems. You want to get active. Get out there and fight it. Make them steal your vote. Don't give it away to them. Don't get in despair. There's been lots of successful movements in this country, even when the odds and numbers and machines and police are against us. The billionaires have never been on our side. Nothing new under the sun. I'm just going to give you the names of the billionaires and how they're stealing their vote. So is Harvey in his terrific book. And if you listen to the show, you're going to keep getting this info. But the last thing I want to do is make people feel we don't stand a chance, and it's a downer.
You're absolutely right, Greg.
And I'm devoting the rest of my shows to the Soartopia Green Power Hour until the election to how people can do exactly that. And, Greg, you're...
Greg, thank you. And, Harvey, thank you. We're out of time. HarveyWasserman.com. Greg Palast. I'm Gary Null. Thank you all for listening to the Progressive Commentary Hour.